Welcome everyone to the July 12th, 2021 Board of Forestry special meeting. We are live streaming this meeting on YouTube, and to make sure our viewers online can follow along with today's meeting, I'll review some meeting best practices to keep us on track. Board members, please silence cell phones and try to limit any background noises. Please keep your video on for the entire meeting to help us all stay engaged with each other in this virtual environment. I encourage you to speak up if you have any questions and identify yourself for the record, or you can use the raise hand feature and I will call on you. If you experience any technical issues, don't hesitate to use the chat function on Zoom to connect with our ODF support team during the meeting. Today, public testimony will be available for the board discussion on the state forester recruitment. So after the board's initial discussion, we ask commenters to join us and to limit their testimony to 3 minutes. Additionally, written testimony can be submitted to the board up to July 16th, so it can be included with the record. Any questions so far? If none, I will perform a roll call to confirm we have a quorum. Carla Chambers? Carla Chambers, are you there or are you muted? I will go on. Ben Doomling?
Here.
Sandra Ferrari?
Here.
Joe Justice?
Here.
Brenda McComb?
Here.
Myself, Jim Kelly, here. Carla, are you here. There?
I'm here.
Great. We have a quorum. So today we are meeting to deliberate on the desired attributes, the draft recruitment plan, and hiring criteria for Oregon's next state forester. We also have subject matter experts from the Department of Justice, the Department of Administrative Services, and some department staff. So if you have any questions regarding the recruitment process during our discussion, I encourage each of you to speak up. So I want to just open this at first, for board member questions on the various documents you've gotten. You've gotten four, which is current draft of our skills and attributes of what we were looking for, which really guides much of the process. The position description, which does not reflect a whole lot of changes from what it has historically. The job posting, which of course does include a lot of what was in our first document with attributes and skills that we're looking for. And then there's the recruitment schedule, which I think will still be getting the schedule there will be edited somewhat as we go forward. So again, all of these are in draft form. And any comments specific or in general that any board member would like to share at this point? Don't all jump in at once.
Jim, this is Joe. I'll jump in. Break the silence.
Thank you, Joe.
I really appreciate how you capture the skills and attributes in the document. Got my feedback. I appreciate that, Jim. I wasn't at the last board meeting, and I watched the discussion. I appreciated the discussion by the other board members, and I'm generally very happy with the document that we've produced. I just want to say that. Interesting in what the public comments will be.
Yeah, as am I. Any other board member comments at this point?
Chair Kelly, I have a quick question.
Sure.
I was just wondering, when we had conversations earlier, we had talked about John looking over the materials and maybe giving us advice and feedback on how to make sure they were structured in a way to capture the largest pool possible and diverse candidates. And has that been able to occur on these materials yet, or is that a subsequent part of this?
I think there's been quite a bit of back and forth, much of it specific to that, between Trish and myself and John. And I would invite John to comment at this point to that end. So I think again, everything's in draft form, but I think that we've been pretty mindful of that. John, any comment at this point?
I agree with you, Chair Kelly. I think after this meeting, we'll have a better idea of which direction we're going to go in regards to diversity. I've been given a few organizations and have reached out to a few while we've been waiting for this to really attack where we're going to go.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. And yeah, and I just wanted to echo what Joe said. I really appreciate the materials and incorporate our feedback into them. I think as well.
And I'll entertain any other general comments. I've got, you know, some specific process questions to just talk about with the board. Any other general comments about, in particular, skills and attributes?
Chair, this is Carla Chambers. I have just one general observation, and I think all the emails on all the fires we're dealing with have had an impact on me, but as I really like how we broke out the skills and the attributes. I'm with Joe. I think the way we broke that out was excellent, but we really don't address, you know, how much this position is going to be dealing with fire. And especially as our scientists tell us, it's going to be a 3 and 4x increase. So we might just look at that because we look at ecosystems. We look at, you know, all the groups we communicate, but I don't know that we, in the required skills, I don't want it to be a surprise how much this position is going to deal with fire.
All right. They'd have to kind of have their eyes closed if they.
Yep, they would. They would.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think we've stressed climate change quite a bit there, but I think you're right. We haven't. And fire seems more implicit to that conversation. We have probably been less direct than we should be about that. So point taken, and I've noted that. Anything else? Other board members further?
Yeah, Jim, this is Brenda. I think Carla makes a good point, and we may want to think about where to insert knowledge of fire, including fire and forest management and fire control. We do have it in an implicit way in number 1 and in number 5, but I think it should be called out. I think that's a really good point.
Okay. Yeah, that language in, I think it's number 1, is actually statutory. So,
yeah.
Right. Other comments? We can always circle back to other general comments, but I am going to ask a few questions of the board. I have gotten some advice so far. When we get through this to the point where we have had at the end of this open period for applicants, where we are going to have John first reviewing what may be quite a few applications for this job, and then we'll have a process that will bring that down to a list of semi-finalists. How big that list is up to us, and I'd like to get feedback on that. I asked John what he thought was typical, and he says he's seen a total of 15 is not an unusual number of semifinalists. And I think he, correct me if I'm wrong here, John, I think you said that, you know, it would be kind of typical maybe to have 10 that are from outside the organization and five within. Now, none of that would be hard and fast, obviously. But to give you all an idea, I think what John also gave me was the typical process would be a Zoom type meeting. with each semifinalist. John was suggesting typically for semifinalists that that would be meetings of about 45 minutes in length. You know, all of you expressed an interest in being all present for that process. So I just wanted to, you know, get an idea that everybody is what their feedback would be on that number of semifinalists. Finalists typically is three, by the way. And of course, that's it would be a much deeper, bigger, longer process at that point. And I'm assuming, John, if we have, say, 15 semifinalists, that those that each of our meetings would have to be an executive session. So we since it would be all of us or at least a quorum, that we would probably be able to group those into where we're interviewing maybe three or four people in a meeting, I would hope, or and not have to have too many meetings. Thoughts on those questions that I posed? These are just process questions here, but what's it sound like to folks?
This is Ben. That sounds great. I mean, that's a bit of quite a bit of work to get through 15, 45 minute interviews, but that's what we're here for, right?
Right.
So I would be rather more engaged than less engaged. So that's definitely sounds amenable to me. Absolutely.
Great.
Now, Chair Kelly, if I may.
You bet.
All right. Well, I want to make sure that everyone understands the tool that we use for those interviews. It's called VidCruiter. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that an executive session would be necessary because you all would be able to log in and rate the candidates to where you wouldn't be all together. First of all, you can't be all together, but you'll each rate and you wouldn't have to be as long as you can log in, then you should be okay. But getting through, say those 15 really wouldn't take as much time as you may think, Ben. I mean, from rating and the questions that are being posed to them.
So John, this is Joe. I did this with the area. This is what they did with the area director. I think I was okay. A part of that. Yeah. And so they're basically interview questions are asked to the candidates. They record Correct. Them. They record their answers. And then you will log in. And that was a really great tool. I mean, you rate. Yeah. I did that. And I was very impressed with that. It was really effective with time. You can do it kind of on your own pace in the evening. Mm-hmm. You can do a few, you know, you're going to get a bunch of links. I think it's links to a website to look at all the various candidates. And I did that with the area director and it worked really well.
Excellent. It
was very handy to do from a time management standpoint, which I appreciate.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously some of this is news to me as you can probably all tell. I'm sure that Hillary and all of us, if we can avoid a bunch of executive sessions and the hoopla that goes with that, we would love that. So as long as what you're representing in the DOJ says that's fine, then I'm good. Any comments do we have Annika with us?
Yes, you do, Chair Kelly, and I'm sure, you know, they will take a look at this, but what it sounds like is that it's not actually a live, you know, there aren't board members asking the questions live. It sounds like there is an interviewee and an interviewer, and you are actually accessing a database to review it and make your own determinations after watching that. So that doesn't sound like a meeting at all, but we will take a look at that and confirm for you as well.
Thank you. Okay.
Hi, this is Sylvia. This is Sylvia Van Dyke from DOJ. I just want to second what Annika said, we've seen other boards use these, and they probably shouldn't count as meetings just because you really are not viewing things contemporaneously.
Great. Brenda?
Yeah, thanks. First of all, I'm all in to review these. That's not an issue. But what is the outcome of reviewing these 15 or so interview questions? Are we then identifying 1, 2, 3 people that would come in for a live face-to-face interview?
The typical, again, this is a process that we control, and so the numbers and all are up to us. But as I have learned it, the typical process is to, yes, this is all to determine who the finalists are. And typically, okay, we would be then looking more extensively in an interview process that I would certainly want it to be face-to-face with typically three candidates, three finalists. Yeah.
Hey Jim, I would assume that we would get together following all these interviews, these 15 of them, and we would get together in an executive session and discuss the pool we wanted to bring back. Would that be the process, John?
John?
That is correct. At that point, you would come together and have some dialogue regarding the candidates themselves. And then your face-to-face could actually occur at that point. Your panels, stakeholders, that's when that would come in. But to narrow that down, that's where VidCruiter would be a very important tool.
Okay.
I have a question about, for those of you, maybe Joe can chime in, for who've used VidCruiter before. One of the things that I like about interviews is the sort of give and take, the follow-up questions, things like that. How, as one person, like would our Chair Kelly be conducting the interview and then we would all watch it? Or are this like just pre-recorded questions? Or how does that actually unfold?
The candidate will actually receive an interview after the minimum qualifications, desired attributes. Once those are met, then I will send out an actual invite, and they'll have an opportunity to answer a series of questions that you have come together with. Each candidate will answer those questions, but each of you can rate them individually. You don't have to do it at the same time. And then once everyone has completed it, then you come together and those rankings will determine who moves on to the next phase. Does that make sense, Ben?
Absolutely. Thanks.
Sure.
If I could, John, that's a little bit different, I think, than what I understood a few minutes ago. So it's the rankings of the 15 summarized over all of the board members that determines who comes in for a face-to-face, or is it the result of a discussion, an executive session that the board members have to determine who comes in for a face-to-face?
I think I heard a little bit of both, and what again, I'll be corrected here, but I believe that we would each individually do the ranking, but then with that information all collected, we would have an executive session meeting and have with each other a session, relative to those rankings, and make sure that we are that we can collectively choose our finalists.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I think it's really important in that executive session where we might have disparities between board members and rankings to be able to talk through those and understand why.
I share that. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't think we would want to go into that with any idea that we're going to narrow this to 3 or 5 or 7. I mean, I think you make that decision in that executive session. You know, here's happens to be we have six that we want to bring back. I don't know. But doing rankings is always a helpful part of the process for me, at least, to see where people are, what they're hearing, what they're, because we'll all hear a little different from candidates too. And so I think that deliberation is really valuable. Because Brenda may hear something different than I heard it. And that's often really good to talk about.
Yeah, I think hearing that, I think Joe is wise that we would defer to making a decision on the number of finalists till then. I did want to bring up, I had thrown out there that they've one job that does need to be done during our periods of the this job opening. We need to figure out what questions we want to ask. And I felt that would probably be best handled by a subcommittee. Is everybody comfortable with that? And if so, how many volunteers would I have for that subcommittee?
Sure, Kelly, I can ask a question on that. Is the subcommittee going to be drafting questions that would then come back to the full group, or are we complete delegation of questions to the committee?
I think... I'm open to feedback here. I think that might require a special meeting or something to have it all. I guess I would suggest that we just delegate that to a subcommittee. And so if that is a completely unpopular idea, I will listen to all of you. Otherwise, I'll push ahead that we do a subcommittee and ask for volunteers. And if you all want to be on that subcommittee, I will be stuck in a position of trying to just select a few names.
Jim, if I could, please. I think Chandra raises a good point, and maybe I misunderstood the outcome. But I think whatever the subcommittee comes up with in terms of questions should then be vetted by the full board.
Okay. I don't know if we can have any process to do that outside of a board meeting, but if so, we'd have to have a board meeting. Does everybody agree that they feel these questions are important enough that they want the whole board to be able to review that?
This is Ben. I'm a little ambivalent on this. I feel like this is not where my area of expertise lies in interview questions. So I'm happy to delegate that. I would like to probably provide the slight bit of input if I read a set of questions and maybe provided minimal input. So a brief board meeting at the end, special meeting after the questions, I would be fine with.
Okay.
But from my perspective, I think that could be kept fairly brief.
Yeah, I would think so. Any other comments on that process question or any other process questions?
Jim, just to clarify, I think if we have that special board meeting to review the questions that the subcommittee develops, that we not spend that time wordsmithing, but we just point out issues that are might need to be clarified or expanded or narrowed.
Okay. We're open at this point. If we've got anything else before we go to public comment from our subject matter experts, from DOJ or Department of Administrative Services, John, any of you, any other comments you'd like to make at this point in the process? Any further advice or concerns?
No concerns, Chair Kelly. I did have a question. Regarding the plan and the job announcement, are we moving forward with that? Is there a motion that has to be?
Yes, John, that will be formalized on our meeting on the 21st.
21st, so, got it. Thank
is,
you.
What is it, 9 days from now? And okay. That's when we have to formally adopt materials that are no longer in a draft format.
Perfect. Thank you. So
that's the plan. Anything else?
I had one. This is Ben again. I had one more question about the process. And I noticed in the recruitment plan, there's LinkedIn and various, indeed, various job sites were sort of listed as options. And there was sort of a placeholder question at the bottom of, do we spend money on those job sites or not? And maybe we're getting into the weeds a little bit, but I wanted to just throw out there that I think we need to do whatever it takes to get as large a pool as possible. And if that includes spending a little bit of money, I would be all for that. John, I'm sure, knows a lot better how to recruit these candidates than I do, but I would look like there was a question and I wanted to answer that from my perspective. The answer would be yes.
Okay. Well, Chair Kelly has provided a list, and I've added to that list as well some other organizations, state and federal. So I will be sharing that with Chair Kelly. If we do not have to pay for sites, I mean, so far I've been given the green light to post on these sites, so that's a plus. It's just quite a bit of competition at this point because there are many, not many, there's a few forester positions that are open on the West Coast. So just to keep that in mind.
So, Ben, I would just comment that I share the same goal to reach out as much as possible. I believe can be corrected here, but I believe that we would be able to, if it's necessary, to do some paid advertising, that those funds will be available to us. So I don't think that's a limitation, but that's my understanding to date. So we'll just see if any opportunities present themselves.
Chair Kelly, can I ask one more quick question of John on the process? I guess I was just wondering, with the first cut that you do, and it sounds like it's a minimum qualification cut, and if that includes more than 15, it seems like we were trying to shoot for 15. Is that what we all agreed on? I just wanted to clarify that. And then what if you have more than 15, or do we have some sort of scoring that goes along with that where you...
Regarding the minimum qualifications, I'm really hoping for more. It could be 100. Mm-hmm. It could be 5. It's just that the veterans' preference, there's many factors involved. But I think that was just being used as an example. Okay. But whomever applies certainly will go through the same process.
At the end of that, though, is that what we're trying to get down to, where we're... I guess the part of the process where we're going to observe the video interviews, are we trying to get to 15?
No.
Okay. So we're going to have whoever meets minimum qualifications, we're going to have interview, that first stab interview for that we will watch.
Well, minimum qualification, desired attributes, and required.
Right.
Yes.
So, okay. Whoever makes that cut, we're watching the interview for that.
That's right.
Okay.
So just to be clear, Chandra, what's happening there is, you know, John will be making some of those judgments, but these applications are ours, and there's been interest before, and there certainly is on my part, that we want to make sure that no application, you know, gets rejected, that board members would second guess that. We have an opportunity in this process to have any of us look at all these applications and be able to interact with John as to whether or not they should be part of that cut or not.
Okay. So we will have access to all the applications, and then we'll be able to have a conversation with John if we notice a particular application doesn't make the cut that we want to know why.
Right. I'll provide a list of all the candidates. It'll be broken down, veterans, those that have met the minimum qualifications, and they'll be ranked with a summary of why they're ranked. You may not agree with it. You may agree with it, but no one will be disqualified out. If they do not meet the minimum qualifications, they'll still be on the list, but you'll see all of the candidates.
Got it. Thank you.
Sure.
By the way, Bill Herber just sent me a text that if we have, we will have dollars for any advertising that we need to do.
Okay. So Chair Kelly, two quick observations. One is just a reminder, we want this pool as deep as possible. So more John is better than less. I'm, in a major search I was involved in San Francisco, we interviewed 19 people, across the country. And our goal here is to find the absolute best. So I think, Chandra, I liked your question because I think we're looking for a deep qualified pool here, for a very important position. On a search I was involved in for the Ford Family Foundation in Roseburg, it was essential in that search that we said, we don't want anybody surprised this is in Roseburg, Oregon, and they need to leave here or live here and be at the office. And I guess this kind of reminds me that there may be some essentials here that we don't want to waste our time with, really precious time and, interviewing. Surprise, this is in Salem, Oregon, and it's, I think, Chairman Kelly, there's probably some essential minimums that we want to be sure that we are well communicated. And have we thought about that list and who's going to communicate that?
I think, these materials to a great degree create this. And I think John has a lot of experience in exactly what you're talking about, to make sure that that candidates are vetted for, oh my God, would you be okay living in Salem, Oregon? John, any comments? I've gotten the impression that your experience will help us a lot through answering what Carl is bringing up here.
Absolutely. I reach out to each of the candidates, thanking them for applying. It's just engaging them in the process and any questions that they may have. But telecommuting always comes up. Excuse me. Also, where will I be? Where will my office be? So we can pretty much identify that from early stages. But there won't be any surprises, at least on our end. Relocation assistance comes up quite a bit. So, but yeah, there won't be any surprises.
Okay. Anything else? We will be able to return to board member comments after we have public comment. Anything else before we move to public testimony?
So Chair Kelly, I just wanted to make a couple of recommendations, just kind of piggybacking off of what Carl and Chandra had said. Looking at the job announcement, it's quite robust. And I think the board did a great job in, developing the required skills and desired skills and attributes. But I would caution listing too many in the job announcement. I think it's quite lengthy. And I'm afraid that we're going to deter applicants from applying from them. So my recommendation would be taking that list of desired attributes and skills and using those to develop your interview questions. Doesn't mean that those, when we're talking about interview questions and the, developing those, it's taking those skills and developing that. So you're still getting at those wish lists, but really, really kind of dwindling that down to the most critical attributes that you're looking for. So just to give it some thought, it is quite robust. So that would be my recommendation.
So I would just comment, this is where I get caught between the professionals, because Trish has brought this up before, that she feels we've got too much in the job posting. I have brought that to John, and John has had the opinion, the opposite opinion, So we can take that offline and try to settle. But that's where we're sitting right now. Okay, anything else? Any other comments? Thank you for that, Trish. All right, Hillary, do we have anyone signed up to provide testimony today?
Yes, we do, Board Chair. And for the record, my name is Hillary Lebo-Shrewd, Board Administrator. We have three members of the public signed up.
Wonderful. Thank you for those who have signed up to provide testimony to the board today. We ask that everyone in the Zoom queue not exceed their allocated time of 3 minutes. I ask that before you begin, that you state your full name and associated affiliation, if you are representing a group or an organization. A timer will be provided to track your time, and each commenter will be called upon by the board administrator. With limited time available, anyone who exceeds their time will be prompted to provide a closing statement. Hillary, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kelly. So everyone in the queue, we really appreciate you joining us today. To ensure we stay on track, I will list your names in a set order. You may have noticed those in the queue. I have organized you by number. And then once I set out the order, I'll call on each of you to begin your testimony. You will be unmuted for your comment portion and just mute upon conclusion. When you begin, a timer will be displayed for the duration of 3 minutes. And when it concludes, I will ask you to make your closing comment. So let's get started. The order today will be Grace, Bob, and Felice. Now, apologies, I can't see your full last name, so you'll have to just make sure for the record to state your full name and any affiliation you may be representing. So let me pull open your timer.
Am I good to go?
One moment.
Not yet? Okay.
Feel free to begin.
Good afternoon, Chair Kelly and members of the board. For the record, my name is Grace Brayler, and I am the Oregon Climate Action Plan and Policy Manager for Beyond Toxics. I also serve as co-lead for the Oregon Climate Action Plan Coalition's Forest Policy Subtable, which coordinates stakeholder advocacy around implementation of the Governor's EO 2004 on climate action. I'm before you today to summarize the comments that have been submitted in writing by representatives from Beyond Toxics, fellow co-lead Oregon Wild, and member group Southern Oregon Climate Action Now, KS Wild, the Oregon League of Conservation Voters and its Metro Climate Action Team, and the Democratic Party of Oregon's Environmental Caucus. Choosing an effective state forester to lead the department is one of the most critical roles the board can play. And given the wide scope of issues facing the department, a new state forester must be a visionary leader who can execute a creative and adaptive approach to managing the needs of an evolving agency and an evolving state. So we wanted to offer our support for this process and advocate for the following in particular. First, we strongly support the board's intentions to have an open and inclusive hiring process for the new state forester that ensures a diverse applicant pool with a wide range of backgrounds and expertise. This position must have the ability to lead significant culture change within the agency. So we feel that they must value diversity, equity, and inclusion within ODF staff and amongst collaborators and partners. They must commit to open and transparent decision-making processes and accountability, display solid interpersonal skills for communication, active listening, outreach, and engagement, and they must ensure collaboration and interdisciplinary work with other state agencies. Next, the state forester must ensure dedication to addressing the ecological crises presented by climate change and biodiversity loss and support a shift to a more holistic ecological forest management process. While they need not be an expert in all fields, they must demonstrate a commitment to valuing and understanding forest management science, climate change science, ecological restoration science, and social sciences. They should work to ensure that ODF recognizes the significant natural solutions that forests and our trees offer and confront climate change through both mitigation and adaptation efforts. Finally, the new state forester should ensure that wildfire emergency planning focuses limited resources on community resilience and prioritizes the needs of low-income, rural, and BIPOC communities in Oregon in particular. Ultimately, the most important qualities of a new state forester will be a commitment to collaboration, science, and equity. To confront the threat of climate change, we must ensure the scope and scale of our solutions match the magnitude of the challenge, and ODF needs a truly visionary leader to fully recognize this ambition. So thank you so much again for the opportunity to provide this feedback and for your thoughtful work in hiring our next state forester.
Thank you, Grace. Next up, Bob.
Hello, board members. My name is Bob Van Dyke, and I'm here today on behalf of the Wild Salmon Center. We're a salmon conservation organization, and because of the importance of forested habitats to salmonids, we've been involved in various state and private forest processes with the Board of Forestry. We've provided comment on state forest planning. And currently, I'm co-chairing the Conservation Caucus in the Private Forest Accord that's ongoing. I appreciate very much the chance to testify today. Some of the things I've intended to say have been covered by the board already. One is to encourage you to cast your net broadly and to broadly seek candidates for this position. It is a difficult job. And the department, I think, as you know, has faced some scrutiny from the public and the news media and the legislature as of late. And it may be that a fresh set of eyes from outside the department or even outside the state could provide some benefits to the department. Regarding the desired attributes, I'm glad to see you've got climate change in there. Obviously, climate change increasingly, affects our forests, but increasingly forests are seen as part of the solution to climate change. So I really hope you'll seek a candidate who's got some expertise there. I also hope you'll put a strong emphasis on a candidate that has been involved in public lands management and has an interest in biodiversity as well. In the past, sometimes the main interest of the state forester or background has been in timber harvest. So having a broader set of interests there would be encouraging. And lastly, I see that Mr. Miner is on the call today. I would suggest that it may be that the governor can actually play a role in landing or recruiting candidates when you get down to the finalists, if there's a pitch to be made. So again, in general, I'll say I think the job announcement and qualifications look good. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Bob. Last up, Felice.
Good afternoon, Chair Kelly and the Board of Forestry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today regarding the important task of finding a new leader for the Oregon Department of Forestry. My name is Felice Kelly, and I'm the co-lead of the forest team at the climate justice organization 350 PDX. We are motivated to weigh in on this matter because we see Oregon's forests as a key part of mitigating climate change and preserving biodiversity in the face of the climate emergency that is unfolding now. I really appreciate all of the thought and work that has gone into this job announcement and how broad the board's lens is. And I encourage you to continue to look perhaps beyond kind of traditional, narrowly defined forestry. Reviewing the draft recruitment documents, I just wanted to urge the board to emphasize that expertise in ecology, especially with regards to climate change, endangered species, forest carbon, is important for the new state forester. Currently, these topics only appear in the desired attributes section, and I worry that that doesn't convey how essential it is that the new state forester come prepared to lead at the intersection of climate change and forestry. Perhaps you would not consider viewing the forest through an ecological lens to be a skill, so it wouldn't be in the required skill section. Unfortunately, there's no required attribute sections, which seems like it'll make it harder for candidates with the necessary background knowledge to rise to the top of the list, as the process has been described in this meeting. Would the board consider adding required attributes or consider how to ensure that that forest climate leaders understand that they need to be within our pool of desired candidates? Finally, with regard to board member comments on ensuring that candidates understand the importance of fire in ODF's work, I just hope that that requirement be presented within the framework of fire ecology, community safety, and using fire in forest management, so that candidates don't interpret it as simply a firefighting and fire suppression mission within the department. Thank you again for your time and consideration and for all the work that I know will go into this process.
Thank you very much. Chair Kelly, members of the board, all testimony providers are all welcome to stay in the Zoom meeting. So, however, we just ask that you remain muted and disengage your video for the remainder of this item unless called upon. So I'm going to stop share. And it looks like board member McComb. I will defer to you, Chair Kelly, for the remaining.
Okay. Thank you very much for providing input, all of those who did so. We appreciate it. And so just want to circle back any thoughts based on the public comment with board members first.
Yeah, Jim, if I could, please. I thought Felice made a good point. It's one that I didn't pick up on when I reviewed the materials. And that is that we do have desired attributes, but we don't have required attributes. And so I'm just wondering, is that something that is somewhat cut in stone in these kind of documents, or can we separate out required attributes from desired attributes?
You know, we get into a bit of a semantic circle go round on this. And some of this has been discussed previously. It gets a little loosey-goosey in terms of what exactly, when you start down through lists of this, what's a skill and what's an attribute. And I think my only thought on that is that when you say required attribute, that's exclusionary.
Yeah.
Or people that will look, I would apply for that job, but they have said that this is, and they may think, I don't really have that attribute. That may be their judgment. So my point here is that if we're really trying to reach the broadest number of people possible, we don't want to have this in any way have people self-select that we wouldn't want to otherwise by our language here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think desired is a term that says to me that it would be great if they had it. It's not necessary. But yet the first bullet under desired attributes deals with diversity. And so, you know, I'm wondering whether, is it possible to strike the word desired in both cases and just say skills and attributes?
It's possible. Sure. Sure.
I would not suggest doing that. There are some implications for your required veterans preference if you just have skills and attributes. And while recognizing the importance of selecting people in rather than weeding people out, I think it is important to have things that are required be labeled as such, like your statutory requirements, and to have some things be nice to have, because you could have a terrific candidate who doesn't have every single piece, but you do have some things that are required. So I wouldn't just list attributes, because it also has implications for your veterans preference obligations.
Hey, Brenda, this is Chandra, and I'm wondering if we might be able to add a little something to the required skills, particularly, you know, we could add something to the familiarity line if we wanted to get something related more directly to climate change. And then we do have a track record of a culture of inclusivity in the workforce. We could maybe expand upon that as it relates to diversity. So I'm just wondering if there's a way to beef up the required skills a little bit in a way that's not too limiting, so that we are still attracting a big pool, but maybe getting a little bit more concreteness with some of those other elements.
Chandra, I will just say the number two in required skill previously in its first draft included diversity, as well as mentioning it later as the desired attributes. And John may be able to explain it, but I got a lot of pushback on that. So that's why it doesn't appear there. John, do you want to explain that?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Kelly. The reason why I felt diversity needed to be taken out, when I read that, I went to the website and I pulled up the affirmative action plan, and the numbers do not support the work that's been put forward for diversity. There's zero in leadership. The numbers are actually going the other way in regards to disabled folks as well as people of color. So if someone read that and we're saying we want you to have a track record promoting diversity, and they're interviewing us as well as we're interviewing them. And if we don't have that and we're asking them to have that, and they're coming into an environment that doesn't have that, I think we're going to get some folks disqualifying themselves. Because diversity is big, but we're having people leave the state because of that mere fact that there, it's not the whole thing of bringing your authentic self to work is a big deal. Feeling safe is a big deal. But if there's no one in leadership, we're talking zero. The 2017, 19, and 19 and 21, it's zero. So I think that will open up a can of worms, and we may lose out on some quality folks, because when I reach out to them, it's, for the lack of a better word, it's sales. I'm introducing them to the state, and I'm introducing the job to them, and I'm going to introduce them to you. But if they're asking me about, well, how come this and how come that, I think we're going to lose some folks. I've seen it in the positions that I've worked on since I've been here the past year and a half. And it's tough. It's an uphill battle. I understand the work that's going into it, but since 2017, nothing. It's 2021. So that's why I was sharing with you, why I think that should be taken out. And it's totally your choice. I'm just going from experience on both sides of that.
I'll just say that I've deferred to John on this, although we have not seen eye to eye exactly on this exact point. I do, just as an aside, a quick aside, I don't think we want to go deep into this, but John has shown some fairly disturbing numbers about the our numbers on diversity, the department's numbers going the wrong way for the last few years. And I think it's, and I know, you know, a whole lot of work has been done by the executive team, and Peter had chided us about being ahead of the board on diversity, but that all seems to be all about words at this point. And while things are going backwards, and I think this needs to be a topic clearly for when we have our retreat, this is one of the things we need to be talking about, why this is happening. Anyhow, enough said on that, I think, but back to these specifics. What else people have to say about that? How do
Jim? Could I just follow up a question to John, please?
Sure.
John, I understand what you're saying, but by not including diversity, isn't it the elephant in the room that has to be discussed at some point? I'm a little confused about why obviously, whether it's ODF or many other agencies or institutions in the state, we're not doing very well. I think to me, it seems like you'd want to find somebody who is passionate about this issue and bring that to the agency? Where does that come in? Where does that come in the process? Maybe that's my question.
I appreciate that question, Brenda. I believe that process comes into play when I reach out, when I'm doing active recruiting and I'm talking to a person of color and having that conversation. I use the same process with the DPSST director. You know, this was during the riots, you know, but having those conversations, getting in front of it. But you're right. I mean, there are folks that want to do the work, but, you know, it's an uphill battle at times if you're the only one and you're the one at the top. And, you know, we're talking less than a 50% loss. Folks are disabled. You know, I was really surprised at the numbers, to be perfectly honest. I spent a Saturday just going through it. I couldn't believe it. I was very surprised. But when I started looking at the demographics of folks that are in forestry as a whole within the state and broken down in other states, I get it. I get it. There's not many people of color in those positions. However, it's growing. It's starting to grow. So reaching out to them directly and being introduced to someone from someone that has it's a behind the scenes process, Brenda. That's part of recruiting.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll make sure that we have the person that the board wants. You know, that's my job.
Great. Thanks for that reassurance, John.
You're very welcome, Brenda.
Other board comments. Would I be correct that in the board's view that we might do a little editing here to strengthen the focus or the recognition that this person is going to be dealing with a lot of fire? And potentially return diversity to number two and required skills, despite what John is saying. Is there a general agreement to that? Or active disagreement?
After listening to John's explanation, I'm fine with leaving it the way it is, as long as clearly he will deal with this when he's talking with people one-on-one. So I'm okay with the language as it is. I think when we interview people face-to-face, you know, that'll give us all a chance to dig into that issue a bit more. Relative to fire, my suggestion would be similar to what one of the people who testified suggested, and that is familiarity with fire management and fire ecology. So it kind of covers the full spectrum of some of the issues that they're going to have to deal with.
Okay.
Yeah, and Jim, I don't disagree with Brenda. I I'm comfortable with the language as it is. I think we should take John's recommendation on that.
Okay. Chandra, you first brought it up. Are you okay leaving it?
Yeah, no. After John's explanation, it makes sense to me. Although I do think more discussion at some point at our retreat just about the broader issue is certainly warranted, because that's concerning on a deeper level. And then I just wanted to circle back. One of the commenters, we were talking about, you know, wanting to strengthen some of the language around climate change as far as it being a required skill, or that didn't really fit there. But I'm just wondering about including something about climate change in the familiarity piece, if that makes sense. I know if we're adding fire there too, then maybe we're getting too many things in that line, but a possibility for an addition.
Boy, we're all becoming familiar with climate change, aren't we? Oh, bad joke, isn't it?
Other thoughts on that?
I mean, Jim, I could argue that that statement implies that familiar Western forest, forestry, natural resource. I guess I don't know that it needs to be said, but
yeah, I guess I would argue, you know, if you look at this as a list, that's one thing. But if you really look at a lot of the language in these various attributes and skills and what we've put, we've given quite a bit of emphasis in those directions, or at least I hope we have. I think there's some fairly strong language. And I think that language should speak more eloquently than just whether or not something, where things are listed. I hope that makes sense to folks.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, I think holistically this captures, it looks good to me. I guess I do understand the commenter's point though, when you're talking about required versus desired. And while we have climate change sprinkled, and while we don't want to be too restrictive, putting it in the required that you have some familiarity with it is, it's a lower bar. Familiarity is not actively having necessarily done anything about it or tackling it. But it's in the required. So it gives it a little bit more, teeth that it is something that this person is going to have to know and tackle. So I do understand that point. And I think it's a relatively easy change to make, and I'm not really sure. I'm fine either way if nobody else is interested in doing that, but I would support doing that as well.
So I heard Joe basically say that he thought it was well implied. Any other board members' feelings on the specific issue of whether we would add climate change?
Well, I tend to agree with Chandra. I think given the interest by the governor and the governor's staff in climate issues, and the fact that climate issues are associated with the fire risks that we see growing, having it more explicit in the required skills, I think, is a good idea. We're not going to practice 20th century forestry and solve the climate problem.
Well, maybe we need to play with that a little bit more, and I don't want to do wordsmithing as a group, but to me, other than the fact that noting its importance, just saying familiarity with climate change is sort of a nothing burger in a way, because we're all familiar with climate change at this point.
Well, I think you could beef it up.
I think it would have to be beefed up a bit or listed separately. Does that make sense to people?
I'm fine beefing it up. I was trying to do something simple if folks didn't want to take the time to wordsmith, but I'm perfectly fine wordsmithing a little bit and beefing it up.
Okay.
This is Ben. I just had one follow-up thought. I think some of this, in a way, almost fits better in the job description than the skills and attributes. I feel like in the skills and attributes, we're looking for a leader and an executive and someone who can put a lot of moving parts together and keep the ship in the right direction. And I'm looking down here in the job description part, and there's this interesting, under the description of duties, there's a 100% box at the bottom, which lists a lot of these things and I think could be beefed up a little bit to really sort of very clearly describe, sort of with some bullet points, fire, climate change, et cetera, the really high level skills that are tasks with which this position is going to need to deal with. And I'm not necessarily arguing to take it away from the skills and attributes, but I'm almost wondering if these more topical issues might be better laid out in the description than the skills and attributes. It's sort of a suggestion, sort of a question.
Yeah, I will have to comment at some point. You know, we're 9 days away from really wanting to have something that we move forward with, and I don't want to be reinventing the wheel here completely. And at some point, we need to be able to move forward with this. You know, going back and forth as to, I mean, maybe there's valid points there, but I think it's just going to be tough to in any way holistically rethink the approach at this point as to what belongs in which document and all. I don't know what else to say on that, but I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think we just have to remember this is a step in the process of finding our state forester. And it's anyway, I guess I'm pretty comfortable with this, but I'm not going to die on my sword if people want to add certain things in that. I think it's very clear what we're, you know, to me, what the skills and attributes of our next state forester we hope to find. And this discussion, you know, I mean, part is related to this very discussion we're having right now. But if somebody wants to change something or wordsmith something, I'm okay with that too. I'm not.
Okay. Well, what I'm hearing so far is that, what I would do, and we would probably do this in some sort of, track change format is just really two changes, one around our climate change and one about the management and ecology fire, and inserting those into this document so in a way so that they're a little bit more forceful. And I think what we'll do is we'll, you know, the next step will be taking, you know, what's come out of our conversation at the end of this today and making those edits, circulating it to the board you know, basically I think people just need to be thinking about, okay, can I live with this and will I be able to vote for this at our July 21st meeting? And we can't make decisions on it outside of that board meeting. So we just need to be mindful of that. Other thoughts, anything else we're missing? Anything else from our subject matter experts, DOJ, DAS?
I'm fine here.
Okay. Thank you. Great. Well, this has been very productive, and I really, really appreciate the participation by all. I don't know if Jason's still with us. I like the suggestion that, you know, that we really should make the governor's office responsible for this being a success. I'm thinking Jason is no longer with us, or he might be chiming in. With that, I guess the only other comment that I would make before adjourning this meeting is I just want to recognize the fact that what's going on with fire with the department is once again absolutely unprecedented. And I think we all just need to be thinking about all those folks every day and hoping for their safety and well-being. It's really critical, and all those folks in the department are under
a tremendous amount of stress, and we all need, I think we as board members all need to continue to be very mindful of what's going on. And it's very frustrating, very, very frustrating to have this all happening, this kind of fire season happening at the same time where we have so much on our plates. So we wish them all well.
Jim, could I ask a quick question before we adjourn?
You bet.
So once the once these documents are finalized and voted on in 9 days, will we each be free to start recruiting people ourselves, or is there some organization level process that we need to follow?
I think I will let John answer that. My guess is that we are each free to do that, but I think that we need to figure out what the coordination process is.
Right.
And, you know, I have specifically asked and that John be reaching out to people like yourself, Brenda, in terms of professional organizations and identifying the widest connections, as well as the dean of the forestry program there as well. So as I have noted in emails, I think everybody we're counting on both everyone within the executive staff and the board to be trying to make sure that John has every available connection that anyone can think of in terms of his outreach.
Absolutely. You've all been deputized as recruiters. So we're going to make this a collective effort. And once it's posted internally and externally, then we can reach out to everyone. But all of you expect to receive a call from me, because I want to partner with every single one of you to where we can narrow this down.
Thank you, John.
Absolutely. Looking forward.
Okay. Anything else? Anybody else? No, last minute. All right. With that, in that case, I will adjourn this meeting of the special meeting of the Board of Forestry. Thank you all for participating. Bye.